Well, I was going to start off this podcast by saying that was exactly what the Sixers needed because they were killing the Orlando Magic to start, ended up squeaking out a 101-96 win over a Magic team that's now lost seven in a row. Before we get into details on that, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us wherever you get your fix. And of course, check us out at libertyballers.com. Joining me, Jackson Frankie, right, for Liberty Ballers as well. Jackson, when we jump into this, looking at this game, and it started out like everything was going to break the Sixers' way. They went on a 17-2 run early. We're up by 15 with just under 7 minutes left and a 12-point lead after one. Kind of let the Magic stick around. Couldn't get it up to 20-25 points, and Orlando went on a bit of a run to get it within 11 going into the break. And then obviously that third quarter, Orlando shifted into a zone, wound up giving the Sixers a ton of trouble, actually outscored Philly 23 to 8, over the first 7 minutes of the quarter. When you're looking back at that time of this one, and we'll get into what this win means eventually, but when you're looking at what the Sixers were doing against that zone, how do you think they could have done a better job of A, keeping Orlando honest, and B, making sure that they didn't, making sure the Magic wouldn't want to go back to zone because things were going to be effective for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, at times, obviously, they tried to get the ball in the middle there to Joel, but they couldn't because the guy, you know, most of those guys aren't very good entry passers. So to begin with, you know, take a dribble, pass fake, then get the ball into Embiid in the middle. And then also, you know, schematically set more screens, quicker ball movement. Like, so many coaches and teams just stop screening against zones, which I think is so weird because, I mean, at the end of the day, a screen is just meant for a body to go between a defender and the ball handler to allow them an unvacated path or whatever. It's a little different in zone because that person's not going to move with you, but still set screens. Like, you know, Rick Carlisle and Dallas did it for years. Now you've seen it with Jamal Moses. Like, the Magic will do set screens right at the top of the key against the two top defenders. That doesn't happen. The Sixers routinely, their Doc Rivers seem to get flummoxed by a zone, and they don't have a great zone buster, especially without Ben Simmons, you know, a smart, or, you know, a high field, quick ball mover, you know, guy in the middle, but you should still be able to get the ball to Joel better. So screens and, you know, finding the way to get Joel's touch, because it felt like they just wanted to feed Embiid, but then, you know, by the time Joel would get the ball, he'd be maybe 4 feet farther out, or he wouldn't get the ball at all, and then it'd result in a late clock shot. So just a lot of things that went wrong. This has continually been an issue for the Sixers under Doc Rivers, and you'd think they would have figured a way to at least better combat it, but it looked exactly like it was last year for the Sixers against the zone.
Yeah, noticing that too, they didn't have a ton of ball movement with or without the ball, and getting literally no penetration. So even if you can get the ball to Joel in the high post to try and, you know, break down the zone or bring in the defense a little bit and get some open shooters. And of course, it didn't help that they didn't hit from outside, which obviously would have given the Magic some second thought into pulling out of the zone, because if the Sixers are killing you from the outside, that would have been a good way for them to kind of mitigate what Orlando was doing. But going back to the bigger picture, I think, of this one, was finally getting almost everybody back healthy. Obviously, they're dealing without Ben Simmons. Who knows when that's going to get resolved. But for the meantime, this was the first time in a long time that the Sixers had literally everyone available. Shake Milton was back, of course, Joel Embiid, Matisse Thybulle. A lot of talk during the game, and especially online and on social media, just about the fact that this is going to be a work in progress. And Tobias Harris mentioned that after the game during his post-game media availability, that, you know, looking at where the Sixers were, and again, going back to quite feels like it was eternity ago, just what we've seen with this team when they started off 8-2 and now sitting at 11-10. How long do you think it will take? Are you anticipating that the Sixers will take a while to find their footing and get back into that groove that we saw them in earlier in the month?
Yeah, I think it's going to take some time because, you know, especially on offense, they're playing a totally different style. You know, they were largely playing around Tyrese Maxey when Joel was out for those 3 weeks. A lot of ball screen heavy plays. And, you know, for all of Joel Embiid's greatness on offense, it's not really as a pick and roll big. And that's in those ball screens really let Maxey get downhill. So you're seeing them work out some kinks there. It seems like the role players are still kind of figuring out. George Niang hasn't been as good as he was maybe even early in the year when Joel was first healthy, and then some of his games, you know, during Joel's, you know, absence. You know, Danny Green's still getting back into the swing of things. And I think Danny's actually been, you know, I thought he was great against Minnesota. I thought he was pretty solid again, you know, against the Magic. He's still kind of working his way back from a minutes limit. So I think it's going to take some time. Tobias hasn't been great the last couple of games. I think he was 6 of 16 against Minnesota, and he was 8 of 20 against Orlando. So I don't think necessarily Tobias's, you know, struggles from the field are so much related to Joel, because I think he can kind of, you know, work independent of Joel. But maybe it's just him getting back in the swing. You know, he missed a couple of games with the hip injuries, had some knee issues he dealt with. So I don't think it's going to be, you know, a quick fix. I don't even think by the end of this road trip, you know, they play four on the road, starting with, you know, Boston on Wednesday. I would be surprised if everything looks, you know, like it did early in the year when they were 8-2 by the end of the road trip. But I think, you know, sometime toward the middle of the month is when it would be a good goal to really kind of figure some things out. I think the schedule lightens up a bit after this road trip against, you know, four pretty solid teams. But you can just tell they're really having to change how they play offensively with Joel back for the better, honestly, because, and Joel has struggled a little bit, but he's a tremendous offensive talent in a lot of ways. And it's worth kind of, you know, trying to maximize things there. And I like that Tyrese and Joel are running a lot more ball screens together, because those are the team's two best scorers in the half court. And so, and even just in general, I would say, so I think these growing pains are smart to try and see, not I would say the growing pains are smart, but it's smart to make sure you can try and maximize this offense, even if it takes a little bit of time in the short term.
Yeah, they shot only 40.2% from the field, and it doesn't help when Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey are combining to shoot 6 of 28 as well. I mean, they couldn't get anything going offensively. And you look at this Orlando squad, like I mentioned, really young. Did have some breaking news about Jalen Suggs. He's dealing with a fractured thumb now, so he's going to miss some time. He got hurt in this one. But you're looking at this from a Sixer standpoint on the offensive end. The Magic, second worst team in defensive rating overall in the NBA. Do you just attribute this one to the offensive struggles, to obviously Orlando kind of switching things up, and as you mentioned, not being able to make the adjustments against the zone? But when you look at how the Sixers were shooting, ended up going 10 of 33 from outside, what are some of the other areas you're looking at when it comes to the offense that you want to see things start to smooth out a little bit now that at least the Sixers got their big guns back for the time being?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing, honestly, right now is, like, they can't play Matisse Thybulle with Joel. It's similar to the Ben Simmons stuff, and in terms of how he clogs the floor when Joel's in the post, and it's worse because Matisse isn't, you know, anywhere near the finisher or even the cutter. It just doesn't have the size of Ben, and that's just killing. It really hurt them against Minnesota, and it hurt them at times, you know, against Orlando as well. That's the biggest thing, is I think that can get rectified once Danny's maybe back to his full minutes load. I don't know exactly what his full minutes load would look like, because now this is twice that he's had, you know, the same, you know, soft tissue injury, you know, even, and then he had the calf injury or something. It was the calf back in the playoffs. So I don't know what a full minutes load looks like for Danny. Maybe it's less than last year. But I just don't think Matisse can play with Joel. I just think it's too tough. And then other than that, I think Joel, you know, I think everyone has to do a better job of making sure Joel gets the ball deep. Like, I think I was looking at his Basketball Reference page, and like a career low 12% of his shots are coming from 0 to 3 feet this year, which is like, I know that Joel's always been great from mid-range, and, you know, or at least very good, and draws a lot of fouls and is taking more threes this year, but that's a staggeringly low number for a 7-footer who has such good touch and can get to the rim fairly often. So I think he's got to do a little better about, you know, getting deep position. His teammates have to do better about getting him an entry pass when he's open. I think there was a play in the Orlando game where he was open early and Furkan took forever, and Furkan finally made the pass. And then it was a turnover because Wendell Carter, I think, fought around the pass for a steal. So it's a collective effort, but, you know, one, Matisse, you can't play with Joel, I think, in terms of offense. And then two, Joel and the team has to do better about kind of getting him deep position in the spots he's best. Because I think it's the biggest thing why Joel hasn't looked as good as a scorer this year. He's not getting the ball in the same spots as last year, I think, as often.
What do you think the other than, you know, trading Ben Simmons or trying to get somebody else, it, schematically, what do you think Doc Rivers can be doing differently to try and help that? And again, getting Joel in more comfortable spots, because, you know, especially really early in the season, going back to, you know, when they lost against Brooklyn in game number two, and then lost that ugly one against the Knicks in game number three, saw a lot of that with Joel in terms of, like you're mentioning, trying to. I felt at the time earlier in the season, the team was kind of forcing things with him and getting the ball. Like you mentioned, you know, if he's on the block, he's 3 feet away from the block and you're passing in the ball there, kind of, you know, again, Joel's a great shooter, but you want him getting the ball as close to the basket as possible. So when you're looking at this, if you're Doc Rivers, what are some ways you'd be able to look at to try and get Joel set up in better positions to be at the same level of a scorer that he was, or at least close to last season?
Yeah. So one of the things I did when JJ Redick was, you know, in town was they ran a lot of cross or flex screens down on the baseline to get Joel, you know, the ball, particularly or usually in the low block where Joel is really good. So I like to see them use Seth or Danny as a screener more down there. Obviously they use Seth sometimes as a screener, but not that much. I think Seth is a pretty good screener. He's not as good as his brother for a guard. Nobody really is. I mean, Seth's an incredible guard screener, but I think Seth is pretty good. Danny, I think, is good. I get kind of why they don't do as much with Danny, because they like to keep him in the corners and he's so good playing along that baseline. but I think it's kind of a disservice to Joel. Or not a disservice so much, that seems, you know, maybe like it's intentional, but it's hurting Joel. And so I like to see more flex and cross screen actions down there to get in the ball deeper. Because yeah, I'm looking at his numbers now, like 12% of his shots from 0 to 3 feet. Last year was his previous career low, which was 21.9 of his shots there. For his career at 28%. So he's just not getting a deep position this year. And so that's what I like to see. Maybe some screen to screener stuff, like a lot. Like I know Denver, when Jamal Murray was healthy, would run, you know, they'd run a cross or a flex screen for Nikola Jokic, and then there'd be a screen, kind of a pin down at the elbow for Jamal to shoot off the dribble or shoot off movement, excuse me. Obviously Danny and Seth aren't great, you know, going into a full sprint to shoot, but I think if that's kind of the secondary option you have, then if the idea is to kind of get Joel deep position, that would be a smart strategy. But other than that, I think it's also on Joel, just kind of, you know, Joel, I think for so much of his career has been so good at making sure he gets deep position, you know, getting low, getting leverage, you know, sticking his butt into the defender and getting deep catch. And that hasn't felt the case as much this year. Maybe he's not trying to play as physically, or, you know, I don't know exactly, but it just hasn't felt like that's been the case, you know, given the Joel that I've watched for so many years. But those would be the two things with Joel. Be a little more physical, establish position, more cross and flex screens. And then, as I said earlier, the other guys have to be better about making those entry passes and looking for them, and, you know, making those entry passes easier for everyone involved.
Jackson, I want to jump into some things about the bench as well. As I mentioned, pretty much well got everybody back at this point. We'll jump into that after a short break. All right, and we're back. I wanted to jump into some of the bench guys. Andre Drummond, has been an elite rebounder considering the amount of minutes that he plays. He's just been a beast on the glass. He had 7 points and 12 rebounds in this one. Actually had a big sequence there at the end of the third, ended up getting an and one, didn't make the free throw, but then scored the first two buckets for Philly, got a couple of offensive rebounds and kind of charged the team up. And this was after Orlando had taken a lead, put the Sixers back up by five. When you're looking at the difference between him with and without Joel Embiid in the lineup, and again, I mean, he had some memorable games while Joe was gone, the 17-point, 20-rebound effort against Milwaukee. You look at the 14 points, 25 boards against the Knicks. Those didn't end up in wins, but he had some good moments. Sacramento, 9 points, 23 boards. But when you're looking at his impact with Joel compared to without Joel, why do you think it seems like he's a little bit better playing, you know, 15 minutes a night as compared to having to have him out there for 25 to 30, let's say, if Joel's out with either an injury or resting?
To me, it kind of felt like the longer the team went without Joel, the more erratic sequences we saw from Drummond. And that's just part of his game at times. Even though he was good against Orlando, we had a few sloppy turnovers, and it felt like as that went on, the erratic nature kind of coalesced into that. Would, and he'd start a game poorly, and then it would just spiral into an entire game would be the, you know, an issue, rather than, you know, when he was playing really, really well to open the year, he'd start the game with a good screen and a roll, or he'd start the game with a steal and a pick and roll coverage, and that would kind of, or he'd have a nice dime to a cutter for a bucket. And so I just think it doesn't really feel like he has a more narrow role. It just feels like when he is in a time constrained role, that he just does better. Like he knows that he's a finite amount of time out there, rather than, okay, Joel's out, I'm going to play, you know, 31 minutes per game, you know, tonight 18. So I don't know, like, I hope I distinguish it well. It doesn't feel like his responsibilities are different. It just feels like his minutes are obviously down, which is the case, but, but that leads to him for some, just, you know, making a, building off of a strong start rather than, you know, falling into the trap of a poor start. So that's just anecdotal. I don't have anything to support, but that was kind of my read on it when Joel was out, that just felt like it got off to a poor start more often than not, as Embiid was out for longer. Whereas, you know, he feels like he started the game well against Orlando, and, you know, ended the game pretty well during his stint. As you said, he was really, really good in that second half stint that he played, and he was key on the Sixers, you know, kind of coming out of this game with a win.
When you're looking at the rest of the bench, Jackson, and, you know, I know you said it's anecdotal, but I just appreciate your basketball insight, because, like I said, you are a savant when it comes to the game. So I always appreciate your insight on that. But when you're looking at the bench guys, George Niang obviously cooled down a little bit after his really hot start to his time with the Sixers. But looking around, obviously Matisse Thybulle, what he brings defensively, Shake Milton, Furkan Korkmaz has been struggling a lot, you know, over the past couple of weeks. But when you're looking at that bench, and Doc had the ability to do so, he finally did go with 10 guys. In terms of the rotation, who is there one or two players that come off the bench at this point that you might look at and think you would like to see, maybe see the Sixers try and get an upgrade there? Or when you're looking at this, like, because I'm kind of trying to take the long view on this, which is, look, that the COVID stuff, the injuries, dealing with all that, especially, you know, within the first month of the season, obviously doesn't help in terms of team chemistry, getting the right system together. You mentioned when you're playing with an MVP candidate, you got to shift things around offensively, which we saw the team, you know, key in on Maxey kind of being the guy with the ball in his hands, especially without Embiid and Harris in the lineup. But when you're looking at that bench itself, is there anybody or is one or two players that you look at that you're like, okay, maybe Daryl Morey could try and get some help? Or do you look at this, and Doc Rivers said this during his shoot around media availability earlier in the day, he was saying on Monday, I'm talking about, but he was saying, you know, he thinks that this team is really, really good when it has everybody fully healthy and available to play. But when you're looking at it from your viewpoint, like I mentioned, who do you think they could look at maybe trying to improve on the bench and adding some depth pieces to give the Sixers a little bit more of a boost, especially on the offensive end?
Yeah. And so I think for me, I'm looking at the two kind of ball handling guards there in Shaik and Furkan. Like, Furkan was so awesome to start the year. It's really a bummer. Like, I haven't got that. I've really enjoyed watching Furkan blossom over the years, but there's no denying that he's really struggled. So I am curious to maybe get farther into the year, as you mentioned, with everyone back. Let's maybe review in a month where Furkan is, you know, efficiency wise. Obviously, it's been tough even the two games with Joel and Tobias back. But I want to kind of see him get a little more stability. But I think, you know, that's a role that you could try to improve. It just depends. Again, like, I think if Furkan is a 34% three-point shooter, you know, which is right about what he's been this year, then you have to kind of upgrade there for sure. But if he is the 38-39% guy he was across the last few years when in the national factory, also factoring in the defensive improvements and the playmaking improvements, I think that's a fine, you know, that's maybe a role that you could look to improve, but doesn't necessarily necessitate it. But again, Furkan's been really poor to this year overall, so that's something you should probably be keeping on the radar. But Shaik still, I think, you know, I think that's a role that you need to improve, especially or upgrade, especially if Shaik's continue to be this on-ball guy, because he just doesn't, I mean, he's really struggling to shoot the ball from deep, and he's not a good enough interior scorer. Even if he has some pretty impressive moments, you know, using his frame and his shoulder to create space for runners and floaters and leaners and whatnot. But those two ball handling spots at the bench is where I'd really look to upgrade. And then I just think, you know, give it, you know, not that you're saying to make a move imminently, you mm-hmm. mentioned that in the long view, but give it a little bit of time to kind of see where these guys level out and then reassess. But right now, those two spots are where I think, at least off the bench, that this team could really stand to benefit, you know, just from those 18, 20 minutes a night that those guys provide currently.
Yeah, you mentioned Furk struggling in terms of shooting the ball. Last 11 games, he's shooting 28.6% from the field, less than 25% from three. So I think, you know, that's been very noticeable since his hot start. Looking around the league as a whole, Jackson, like I mentioned, we're basically at the quarter pole of the season. Every game, every team, pardon me, has virtually played 20 games or around there, give or take one or two. Looking around the league and especially at teams that might start to struggle. Obviously, you got the Houstons, the New Orleans Pelicans. We're going to wait and see what happens if and when Zion gets back in the lineup, and maybe he can jumpstart that team. The San Antonio Spurs, pardon me. You got Orlando, Detroit, all these teams that are kind of bottoming out. But when you're looking around the league and you mentioned, you know, again, we're not saying that the Sixers have to make a deal and Daryl Morey has to do something sooner than later. But when you're looking around at the league, is there any particular player that might be under the radar that you would be like, okay, that would be a good guy to maybe try and bring in, again, depending on the cost, but trying to bring in terms of helping the second unit and somebody who's not going to come in, you know, making $15 million a season?
Yeah, that's a good question. I hadn't really thought about it, especially just because it does feel, you know, fairly early for that. Trying to think about guys, you know, and it's tough too, because I think so many teams are considering right now, at least still, like the play-in to be a viable option. I mean, you look in the East, you know, there's 13 teams within two games of the play-in right now, or I guess two and a half games now. And they're in the West, you've got 13 teams that are within three and a half. And as you mentioned, you know, that doesn't include the Pelicans, who might be getting Zion back in the near future and have been playing a little better as of late. I wonder what a guy like Eric Gordon might cost. I know he's probably making too much. But it's tough because the Sixers don't have a lot of mid-sized contracts. You know, it's a lot of max deals. And then I think Seth is their best, you know, guy on a mid-sized value, but you're not trading Seth because he's really important and has been excellent this year. So I really don't have a great answer. I wish I had something, you know, better, but I just think it's tough because a lot of the guys you might target that are on teams that probably are going to be out of the running sooner rather than later or already currently are, or prioritizing your long-term development, are guys that are on bigger deals, like say a Buddy Hield or an Eric Gordon. Maybe a Kelly Olynyk, but he's on mid-sized deal, and the Sixers don't have a lot of those still. So I think Kelly could be a guy that makes sense, but I think he's making about $13 million, which is tough for the Sixers to kind of figure out financially there. No one on Orlando really inspires me. Terrence Ross has struggled this year. Gary Harris has really struggled, and I don't think Gary is really going to invigorate your offense at that guard position. So wish I had a better answer, but maybe next time we pod, I'll do a little bit of research and come back right off the dot with four names for you. But no one comes to mind, just in part because I didn't have anything, you know, prepared, but also because I just think a lot of teams are still eyeing the playoffs as a realistic goal currently.
Yeah, we're going to start to see that kind of teams especially start to follow it as we get into the new year. And as you mentioned, December 15th, that's going to be a date where you're going to start seeing maybe more teams look to move guys, because that's when the recent free agents become available. So you might start to see some trade chatter pick up then. But from what, you know, all reports right now that the trade market pretty much will dead. And we've seen that what's going on with Ben Simmons. Jackson, I'll get you out of here on this. They're, like you mentioned, they're coming up on a 4-game trip. They're at Boston Wednesday. Sixers are in Atlanta on Friday, then back-to-back against LaMelo Ball and the Hornets. How do you think they'll do over those 4 games?
I think 2-2, you know, I was actually thinking about that today, you know, during the game a little bit. I think 2-2 is kind of my bet. I don't know exactly what that'll look like. You know, if Joel had been the player he was last year, this season, and wasn't dealing with COVID, I would feel pretty confident about a winning against the Celtics, just given how much he thrives against them. But I don't know, you know, what Joel we're going to get. Understandably so, he's coming off of COVID and he said it was a pretty serious bout. So, he just hasn't been the same player as last year offensively to this point. So I can't say for certain who they're going to beat, but I just think 2-2 would be a good goal. Come back, you know, 13-12, and then maybe try and find some stability with the stretch at home here. But yeah, that would be my prediction, is 2-2, but you can't interrogate me any further. I won't tell you.
Well, you know what? I'll go with 3-1. I think they beat the Celtics on Wednesday. They'll split with Charlotte and hopefully get a win against Atlanta and its annoying home crowd on Friday. And we'll bet a 6-pack on that. Jackson, how does that sound?
All right. Hopefully the Hawks do not hit many threes, honestly, because I don't know about you, but I do not like it's the Hawks screeching. Nothing against them, but it's just, I cannot stand that celebration. So hopefully it's a cold game from outside for the Hawks, independent of any on-court result there.
Yeah, we like to see an 8-35 shooting night and we have to deal with that and quickly get the hell out of there and get some wins in Charlotte. Jackson, thanks again for joining me. Always fun having you on, and I'm sure we're going to do this again soon as well.
Yeah, awesome. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Jackson Frank. You can check out his work at libertyballers.com. Does a ton of the post-game stuff for us, as well as some of the previews and other news-related items. So definitely check them out there. And, of course, you can subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your fix, you can catch us there. That'll do it for this episode. Adil will be back with Out of Sight on Tuesday, and then I'll be back in the chair on Wednesday for the post-game against the Celtics.